Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to talk about music this morning, and I'm going to cut right to the chase because I have way more material than I'm ever going to cover. Would you mind putting my number up on the screen there? Tim's going to put my phone number and my email address up on the screen, and I would like for you all to do something for me. Take the first song from your playlist, especially if you have it on your phones, it'll be easy. Take the first song, just the top one from your playlist, and you can send it to me anonymously. Either text, WhatsApp, email. If you don't have it on your phone, you have it some other way, and you want to share it with me, just onto my computer or something, that's fine too. But once it gets up there, take a minute to write that down. I'm not going to be judging or critiquing it. This is simply research sake. Okay, yeah. So if you don't have pens or something on you, you can get this from Tim later. And if you could have that to me by the weekend, I'd appreciate it. Okay. Message title this morning is, What's Your Song? And I'm going to read a few verses out of Revelation 5. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of odors, which are the prayers of saints. And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation. Talking about a new song, there's various places in the Bible, in the Old and the New Testament, where it talks about this new song. And the new song is a song of redemption. It's a song that can only be sung by those who have experienced it. In the Old Testament, it's interesting to me, it seems to be commanded, go sing this new song. But in the New Testament, it's simply an expression. And I believe that shows the difference between the ritualism and the ritualistic worship of the Old Testament and the spontaneous worship of the New Testament Christian. It's a response to the life that flows through us. Now, some of you have heard a form of this message that I've preached before, and those of you that are in my rudiments class, we're going to be going over some of this stuff as well. But I believe it's important to understand music and what music does to us, and the way that music works if we're going to make right choices in listening to music. I believe often one reason that we get into this thing of listening to negative music is because we don't actually understand what it does to us, and we don't understand how it works and how it affects us. There's also simply the fact that it's more often an expression of our humanity than our transformed reality as servants of God. Music is a human reality. Various cultures have their own types of music, and it's something that's important to us as human beings. But when we accept Christ as our Savior and He transforms us, He transforms that expression that comes out of us as well. And so that should be different than just a regular human expression. It should be a transformed expression, this new song. Now, I'm not a music expert. I'm not an oracle. There's lots of people who know way more about this subject than I do. I'm not trying to say that I have the definitive word here. And I can't give all the aspects of every point that I give. I can't give all the arguments for it. We don't have enough time. So we'll try to go where God leads us here this morning. Now, the music that you all are listening to right now is very important because it's the music that you're going to gravitate towards again as you get older. Now, that's actually, you're a little bit late in the game. Around age 14 is where your brain kind of cements towards the type of music that it likes. And it gravitates there and it kind of holds on to that and follows that on through. You can change. Your brain is malleable. The synapses in your brain can change. They can reroute, but it takes work. So that's one reason it's very important that right now you make good choices in music, because the music you are listening to right now that you're immersing yourselves in is what's going to be the kind of music that you're going to continually gravitate towards as you get older. Music is different than conversation. You summarize conversations. When you speak with someone, you can give a short little blurb that says, this is what these people were talking about. This is what our conversation was about. In music, you don't do that as quickly. You tend to, if you're looking for just a phrase of a song, you tend to run through the whole song in your head or the whole verse of song until you get to that little particular phrase. Music impacts us in different ways as far as the different genres of music, different songs, familiar songs. If you think think of a song in your head right now. Just sing it to yourself. I'm going to give you a song, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. And just sing that song a little bit in your heads. Okay? Now shut that one off. And think of the song, Mary Had a Little Lamb. Okay? Did you feel any change in your emotions as you sang those songs differently, those different songs to yourselves? If you're a normal person, you did. One song was a more, I guess you could say, mature song. The other one was a child song. And so you feel a little bit silly singing this child song to yourself. That's just a very, very simple illustration of how music affects you. We also listen to the music, to music, in the light of our personal experiences. So this tune right here. Da 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 da. Okay? How many of you thought of the song J-O-Y? How many of you thought of the song Jingle Bells? Okay, it's the same tune. Now, the interesting thing for me was that I didn't even think about it that they were the same tune until my 3-year-old heard a clock that was singing these clocks that sing these different tunes, and it was singing Christmas carols, and it was singing Jingle Bells, and I was singing Jingle Bells with it in my head. And she started singing J-O-Y, J-O-Y. Oh, yeah, that is right. So music, we listen to music differently in the light of our personal experiences. And because of that, there are different opinions in music, because our personal experiences are different. Now, that doesn't necessarily dictate what is right and wrong music, simply because we've had different experiences. And I'd like to look at that here on what are some good guidelines to actually determine what is good music and what is not good music. Sometimes we say, why can't I just listen to music that makes me feel good? Why does anyone care what kind of music I listen to? Does it really matter? Why is music so hard to understand? Why is it so complicated? So I'd like to just look at a few aspects of what music actually does to us. So first of all, it affects us emotionally. And those little songs that you sang to yourselves, the way you felt changed as you sang them. Music does not hit the logic centers of our brain the way that conversation does. When someone talks to us, they give us some information, we process it, we decide if it makes sense or not, we say, yeah, that lines up with other things that I've heard. Music, we don't do that. It goes straight to the emotion, bypasses the logic, and that's why you get strong reactions from music, why people say they love songs or they hate songs. It's strong reactions because it's not going through the logic centers of their brain, it's going straight to their emotions. That's not necessarily wrong. God created our emotions, but man can distort emotions. And composers are very unashamed in the way that they manipulate your emotion through song. That's their job, is to try to manipulate your emotions to where they want it to be, and then they can sell their music. So they're not afraid to say that. But I think often we try to deny that. We say, oh no, it's not the music that's making me feel this way. It's other things that I'm facing in life. And we don't recognize the emotional impact that our music has on us. It's interesting that singing together, singing as a group, actually raises serotonin levels. And serotonin is the one of the feel-good hormones that you have. So when you sing together, it's the hormone that makes you feel bonded. So that's one reason why participating, if you're singing with your congregation, participating in the singing is important. If you want to feel a sense of brotherhood with your home congregation, sing Sunday morning. Instead of sitting there mouthing the words and sitting like a bump on a log, join in the singing. That's a way of actually connecting with the people around you. So it happens, of course, in chorus. And it's interesting to me that God designed us that way. Why do you think he did that? I think it's because music is important to God. And community and brotherhood is important to God. And so singing together is a way that God has designed that we can strengthen those bonds of brotherhood. Music also has a physical impact on us. And there's lots and lots of studies done, and I don't have time to go into nearly all of them here, about the physical impact that different genres of music have on us. But they've done studies on rats, they've done studies on ice crystals, they've done studies on plants, playing different types of music to them, and universally, heavier types of music, rap, hip-hop, rock, pop, that kind of thing, destroy life. And more classical music assists life. And why is that? Why, you know, is it just because people don't want us to listen to that kind of music and so that's how they bias their studies? Well, no. What actually happens is your brain thinks in a cadence. You have a rhythm. Everybody has a rhythm, whether you think about it or not. The way you walk, the way you talk, it's easy to tell if it's dark, especially if it's someone you know well. You can't see their face, but you see them walking. You know who it is. Why is that? It's because people have a unique pace in the way they walk. They have a unique rhythm. Our brains think in rhythms. And with a lot of classical music and hymn-style music, gospel music, the way it's composed goes with those rhythms. So there's expectation. It builds up to a chord that then is nice and solid and makes us feel good. And then it comes back down and goes back up to that again. And it does that repeatedly through the song. Sometimes it takes it all the way through to the end of the song. And if you've noticed, if you're learning a new song, often, you know, you kind of struggle through the song as you come down to that last note and everybody, boom, everybody hits that last. They can get that last note. Well, that's because that's the way it was composed. It was designed that way. The composer brought it to that point where we can all feel good on that last note. There's a definite conclusion and we feel successful about it. And that's the way that we operate. And with a lot of these other genres of music, they don't have that. Just when you're getting to that point where your brain says, okay, here's the point where you should have this conclusion, the rhythm breaks, the tone breaks, something happens that denies you that. And so you end up with this sort of limbo, and it's bad for your emotions. It makes you feel like you're never quite where you're supposed to be. And it's what leads people to angry outbursts. Studies have shown that people who listen predominantly to these types of violent music have especially in men, they show more violence towards women. And is it any wonder when they're listening to that kind of music, because their brains are telling them, "Hey, we haven't got this thing yet. We've got to keep going." And your brain is always on full alert, never has a chance to actually come to any kind of conclusion on something. I saw a live study done one time where they had a orchestra on stage, and a neuroscientist was up there, and he got one of his friends that he knew was a classical music lover up onto the stage, and they were Australian, so they played a familiar, if you've ever heard Waltzing Matilda, it's a Australian pseudo-national anthem. And so they attached these brain probes to his head, and they projected it up on the screen. You could see all the little squiggly lines, you know, that were his brainwaves going. And at first they were kind of spiking around because he was nervous, and then it settled down and was going along. And they started playing this song. And as soon as they started playing, you know, the feel-good centers of his brain started to go up and down, and it was feeling good, and he was going along. And what he didn't know is that the neuroscientist had told the orchestra, just as they were getting to one of those conclusive points of the song, to just all play a false note, but keep going, but like everybody a half step too low. And so it sounded awful. It was almost there. It was almost right, just not quite. And so he was sitting there peacefully listening, and all of a sudden they hit this, and his brain up there just went totally crazy. Things were overlapping and squiggling, and it was just a real-life illustration of what happens to your brain when you listen to that kind of dissonant music. And that's why these heavy genres of music are hard on you, because they actually negatively affect your brain. And when your brain is negatively affected, the rest of you follows. The spiritual impact, of course, is also tremendous. In 1 Corinthians 14:15, it says, "What is it then? I will pray with the Spirit, and I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with the understanding also." So we know that if one part of us is affected, it affects the rest of us. It's hard for pieces of our body to operate independently of each other. So if we smash a finger, the rest of us hurts as well, or plays into that. And yet we try to say that music is different. We can listen to negative music, but it won't affect the rest of me. It won't affect my spiritual life. This is something that I've heard plenty of times before. This is just enjoyment. I just have my music that isn't feeding my spirit. It's just enjoyment. So I listen to that music just as enjoyment, and it doesn't actually affect my spiritual life because it's a side enjoyment. Well, unfortunately, that's physically impossible, because as it enters your mind, as it enters your brain, it rewires those circuits in your brain, and it does affect you physically. It does affect you spiritually as well. So the thing about music is it's twofold, and I'm not going to go into that right now, but it affects us. And it also expresses what's inside. So my spiritual life is influenced by the kind of music that I listen to, but it's also expressed by the kind of music that I listen to. So when you listen to some music and someone says, "Oh, that doesn't sound very good. Where did you get that?" And you get all defensive about it and say, "What do you care? That's fine. I can listen to this if I want to." That's a way that music is expressing who we are. And I think what happens sometimes that's hard, I know that it was hard for me, and still is sometimes, that I listen to music not realizing that it's affecting me. So I know this music isn't an expression of my heart, but I think I can listen to a little bit and it's not going to affect me. And what happens is it changes. This music changes from affecting me to expressing me, because it's now become a part of who I am. And that's one reason why it's important to know when you're listening to bad music or music that's unhealthy up front, because you can stop it or change it before it gets to the point where it changes you, and it becomes an expression. Now, being influenced is right, and being expressive is also right, but only if those influences and that expression are correct. So in right and wrong music, is it only an opinion? That's one thing that we know, is that people think differently, and people are affected differently. And so when we listen to music, that is one of the most common cries, is that, "Oh, that's your opinion. Oh, this is my opinion." And there's room for opinions. God made us differently. God made us as diverse human beings, and thank goodness he did, so that we're not all the same. And so we do have different opinions on things. We do have different ways of looking at things. But when it comes to the character of God, is that a matter of opinion? And when it comes down to it, music, our music should be an expression of the character of God, because our music should be praising him. It should be an expression of that new song, that redeemed life inside of us. So our music should be expressing the character of God. And if it is not, that's not a matter of opinion. Isaiah 51:11 says, "Therefore the redeemed of the Lord shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their head. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away." And that's the song of the redeemed. Joy, gladness, salvation, redemption. Is redemption a matter of opinion? No, it's not. Yet we look at some of these clear teachings in the Bible, and we say, yes, that makes sense on this, and yes, that makes sense on this. But with music, I'm just listening to it for entertainment. And that's not all I listen to, okay? It's just, you know, this little bit of music over here. That's just my entertainment playlist. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't express me. It's just the fun stuff I listen to. Again, is it in line with the character of God? That's our basis for right and wrong music. Now, within that, well, we'll get into that here in a bit. But our worship should be a reflection of an adoration of God, his works, his character. And God's character doesn't change based on my opinion. But what about taste? Because, like I said, we are different people, and we do have different tastes, and we do have some of us, last night at introduction night, some of you guys are introverts, some of you are extroverts, some of you are introverts posing as extroverts, some of you like coffee, some of you pretend to so that nobody else makes fun of you. So what about taste then? How does taste play into music? Well, I believe it does, and I believe it can. Different backgrounds, even different geographical locations. There's different cultural norms when it comes to music. So I believe that as long as your music is in line with the character of God, there's still a lot of variation within that for taste. But as long as your music is in line with the character of God, It's still right music. I think what tends to happen more often is that we get imbalanced in the character of God that we portray in our music, and we focus on one aspect of it rather than the whole spectrum of God's character. And so maybe we focus on joy, or on redemption, or on love, or on compassion, or on healing, or you pick it, but there's one character that we focus on, and that leads to an imbalance, and that's what our playlists are all about, and we don't have a balanced view of the character of God. I think it's important that you do have some kind of opinion on music. If you don't have any kind of opinion on music, you end up doing the same thing as you do with say social media, where you don't have a reason to be on your phone, but you just kind of scroll through anyhow, see what's going on, just because you didn't have anything else particularly to do at the time. And so we do the same thing with music then, just kind of consume it because we don't really care. And so I think that can also be something that gets us to the point where we say, oh, this is just my entertainment music because I just listen to that music when I don't really care. And again, that I believe that in itself can be an expression of our Christianity. There's in choosing your songs, I say be careful of your diet. Make sure you've got varieties of songs. They don't all have to be classical. They don't all have to be hymns. They don't all have to be gospel. They don't all have to be praise and worship. They don't all have to be Christian experience songs. But make sure they're all after the character of God, and have a good cross section, and it helps you understand the character of God better. And there are some songs that are better at explaining the character of God than another. My 3-year-old likes the song Itsy Bitsy Spider. And that's a song about perseverance. Such a good character to have. Perseverance. Get washed down the spout and just crawl right back up again. Well, that's okay for a 3-year-old to work on perseverance through that song, but by the time you're 19, there should be better songs in your playlist to help you work through the difficulties of perseverance than that. Many contemporary Christian titles deal with the grace, love, and adoration of God, his relationship with us, how he cares for our needs, how he's worried about us, how I am important to him. And that's important and that's true. But too much of that makes me selfish, because those songs are fairly self-focused. And that is a character of God. He does care about you individually. He does care about your individual needs and the things that you face. And he wants you to have this close relationship with him. But if that's all that your songs are portraying, is God caring about me, and there's no songs about missions, about God caring about other people, about the broader aspects of discipleship and perseverance, maybe, then you're getting lopsided in your view of the character of God. So I'm not discounting those songs by any means, but they should be a part of your playlist, not your entire playlist. Some aspects about these, just some different parts of music then. Looking at wrong music, what does it promote? It promotes self. Colossians 2:18 says, "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels, intruding into those things which he hath not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind." And one clear and easy aspect to tell if music is wrong is if it's a glorification of the singer. And much music is. It's trying to get the artist into the limelight. And that's making an idol, and that's an abomination to God. So that's a fairly clear indication right there of music that we might not want to be listening to. Any singer should be only the hands and feet of God. Should be, if we're giving a program, it should be a means of channeling people's minds and the audience to God, not to us. And in the songs that you listen to, in the music that you listen to, it should be the same way. The songs you listen to should be a means of channeling your thoughts to God, not toward the artist. And there's a lot of contemporary Christian music, unfortunately, has borrowed heavily from secular music, in that the artist is the key. And so you've got these exquisitely coiffed singers with manicured nails crooning into the mic, these ballad style hymns, or you've got in contemporary Christian music, you've got sweaty bands thrashing out bass lines with drums and heavy guitars, audiences screaming and waving their arms about, and then after the concert they run forward and the artists are the stars of the show. Those instances, your emotions are excited. And that's why it's important to realize that music does affect your emotions, because I think too often we mistake an emotional high for a true connection with God. And you know what that's like in relationships. You can have an emotional high connecting with someone that is shallow. There's no depth to that relationship. And if that's our relationship with God, is the shallow euphoria, this emotional high, then that's a good sign that our music is not what it should be. Wrong music almost always has selfishness at its core. At some point, place or other, either it's self-promotion, self-gratification, self-justification, or even on the flip side, self-loathing or a victim status. Either way, it's focusing it back on me. Or maybe it's just all about God loving me and forgetting the rest of the world. Selfishness is a motivating factor of wrong music. And we seem to have a tendency to think that as long as a song has a Christian title or Christian lyrics, that it must be okay. There's lots of secular artists that have recorded a gospel album. Why did they do that? And that's something we're going to talk about in Rudiments class, and those of you that have already been there know how I feel about that. So they did it because they're smart. They know that the Midwest down through here is this big old Bible belt that these guys say, oh, rock music is bad, pop music is bad, hip-hop music is bad. But, oh, look at that. This guy put out a, this rock artist put out a gospel album. Well, he's okay after all. So they buy his album in droves, and not only that, their children then come to them and say, hey, can I listen to this guy? They're like, oh yeah, sure, he put out a gospel album, so his stuff's fine. And then they buy all his stuff, even the stuff that has clearly pagan lyrics, and beats and rhythms. So these artists aren't stupid. They're smart. There's a good reason they do that. But we get sucked right into that sometimes too, where we don't care who the artist is, because this song was a Christian song. And so just watch that. I'm not saying that you have to go and do an extensive background check on every artist that's on your playlist, but be aware at least. So wrong music also promotes baser emotions, and it's almost always accompanied by feelings that drive euphoria. And euphoria, I'm sorry, I'm trying to talk too fast and my tongue is getting all tangled up. Euphoria is a blissful, meaningless happiness where it's being driven by your surroundings. It's nothing inside. It's this, everything's good on the outside, forced into your head, and it feels nice. And that's what wrong music does to us. But right music, we're just going to jump down here, promotes pure emotions. You know, the verse in Philippians that says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, honest, so forth, think on these things. Sing on these things. That is also true. So I'll jump ahead here a little bit. So songs that produce emotions of compassion, burden for the lost, sacrifice, joy. And remember, joy is different than euphoria. Joy is an emotion that comes from within, from something that's actually happened in your inner being versus this meaningless euphoria on the outside. Hope, glory, perseverance. Those are good emotions. And if those are the emotions that your music is producing, then that's a good sign you're listening to good music. Good music glorifies God. It glorifies the Creator, not the creation. Good music promotes an abandonment of self, not a focus on self. Good music builds bridges. It takes you from despair to hope, from worry to trust, from hatred to love, from selfishness to compassion, from lust to purity, from greed to generosity, from being empty to being fulfilled, from being broken to being whole, from being lost to redemption. Much secular music revels in those lower emotions. I'm feeling lonely, and so we sing these songs about being lonely and loneliness and sadness. The true songs of the redeemed, good music, takes us out of that, recognizes that God is there for us, that we can accept His hand of healing, and it promotes healing in ourselves. And then it promotes looking out, looking at others, not at ourselves. It's a song of triumph and assurance. Isaiah 51:11 says, therefore the redeemed of the Lord shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their head. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away. So I'd like to encourage you to keep your music God-centered, after the character of God, based on His Word, bringing glory to Him. And think about it as you're listening to it. Think about the music that you're listening to. Don't just mindlessly absorb it. Think about what it's actually doing to you. And then that might help you. A lot of people say, I don't know. I don't know if it's good or not. And I know it can be tough to discern sometimes, but think about where this music is taking you. After you're done listening to the song, how do you feel? Do you feel closer to God? Do you feel more like listening to authorities in your life? Or do you feel farther away from God, more lonely, more discouraged, more rebellious? That's a good indication of what that music is doing to you, because, again, music works on your emotions. Bring glory to God through your music. Singing is one of the most powerful tools that we have as Christians to spread God's love and spread His character and awareness of Him to people around us. So let's not waste it. Let's not use it in pooling into ourselves and focusing on me, but let's use it in the way that God intended, to bring glory to Him and to bring glory to His kingdom. We pray. All right, let's stand for prayer. Our Father in heaven, we come to you this morning. Lord, I thank you so much for each one of these young men and women here this morning. And I pray that you would just bless them in a special way this term of Bible school. I pray that you would open your word to them. And I pray that you would work a mighty work in each one of our hearts. And I pray that you'd be with their families at home as well. Bless them. And I pray that you would be with the classes that they attend. And Lord, I pray that you would be with us all as we look at making right choices in music, that we would find your character and find you in our music, and that we would glorify you in all that we do, in music and out of it. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated.